Welcome to this 19-part series of Business Podcasts by David Maister, exploring the key principles and practices found in his new book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker.
Hello, I'm David Maister. In this latest series of podcasts, I'm proud to present a special 19-part pre-release of the audiobook version of my new book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. If you're interested in purchasing a copy of the book in hardback, it is available for pre-order from both Amazon.com and at my website at davidmaister.com/store. Chapter 1, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. Much of what companies do in the name of strategic planning is a complete waste of time, no more effective than individuals making New Year's resolutions. The reasons are the same in both situations. Personally and professionally, we already know what we should do. Lose weight, give up smoking, exercise more. In business, strategic plans are also stuffed with familiar goals. Build client or customer relationships. Act like team players. Provide fulfilling, motivating careers. We want the benefits of these things. We know what to do, we know why we should do it, and we do know how to do it most of the time. Yet we don't change, most of us, as individuals or as businesses. The problem is that many change efforts are based on the assumption that all you have to do is explain to people that their life could be better, be convincing that the goals are worth going for, and show them how to do it. This package is patently ineffective. If this were true, there would be no drug addicts in the world, no alcoholics, no bad marriages. Oh, I see, it's not good for me. Ah, well, then I'll stop, of course. What nonsense. And yet strategic plans and annual speeches by CEOs, managing directors, managing consultants and others continue to have this same useless structure. Look at how fabulous it would be if you were a fit, non-smoking exerciser, David. My usual response? True, but please shut up and go away. And that's the response of most audience to the managing partner's or the consultant's latest vision or strategy. We all knew this all a long time ago. Yes, it would be good for us, but why don't you ask us why we don't do it? Now there's an interesting question. The primary reason we don't work at areas in which we know we need to improve is that the rewards and the pleasure are in the future. The disruption, the discomfort, and the discipline needed to get there are immediate. To reach our goals, we must first change our lifestyle, our daily habits, now. Next, we have to have the courage to keep up the new habits and not yield to all the old familiar temptations. Then and only then, we get the benefits later. As human beings, we are not good at such decisions. We start self-improvement programs with good intentions, but if they don't pay off immediately, or if a temptation to depart from the program arises, we abandon our efforts completely until the next time we pretend to be on the program. That's our pattern. Try a little, succumb to temptation, give up. Repeat until totally frustrated. Unfortunately, there is rarely, if ever, a benefit from dabbling or trying a little on any new strategy. You can't get half the benefits of a better marriage by cutting out half your affairs. You can't cure half the problems of your alcoholism by cutting out half the drinks. And you don't much reduce the risk of lung cancer by cutting out half the cigarettes. So it is with business strategy. You can't achieve a competitive differentiation through things you do half well, reasonably well most of the time. Not only can you not dabble, but you also cannot have short-term strategies. An oxymoron, if ever there was one. As Jean Nidetch, the founder of Weight Watchers, believed, the pursuit of quick weight loss is always self-defeating and ill-advised. If you don't understand from the beginning that you have to change your lifestyle now and forever, then you are wasting your time. Any initial weight you lose will be put right back on. What's more, repeated short-lived efforts at weight loss are actually detrimental to long-run success, since, among other reasons, they breed cynicism and the attitude of, oh, we can't do this, we've tried and failed before. Millions of people and countless businesses have proved her insight exactly correct. You are either seriously on the program, really living what you have chosen, or you are wasting your time. Debating which goals to pursue is a nonsensical process if you lack the discipline to stick with the different diet and exercise programs that each of these diets requires. The only meaningful debate is which diet you're really ready to get on. It's the same in business. Discussing strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, to take only the oldest and most familiar of the strategic planning exercises, is fun, but it gets nowhere near the real questions. The necessary outcome of strategic planning is not analytical insight, but resolve. The essential questions of strategy are these: which of our habits are we really prepared to change, permanently and forever? Which lifestyle changes are we really prepared to make? What issues are we really ready to tackle? Now, that's a different tone of conversation and discussion, and the reason the real debate is so often avoided. Discussing goals is stimulating, inspiring, and energizing. Discussing what disciplines you're prepared to accept to get to a goal feels tough, awkward, annoying, frightening, and completely unpleasant. The debate you would need to have in your company if you really wanted to pursue a strategic goal would be a series of questions like these. Which diet, if integrated into the normal running of our company, would actually get us to perform at a higher level, enough to achieve the benefits we seek? What measures, follow-up systems, investments, disciplines, and yes, rules would we really need to get there? Next, which diet would we be prepared to adopt as a central part of our regular lifestyle? If we don't like any of these diets, can anyone think of another one that will have as much force as the ones we have considered, but we could live with more easily? Notice, substitutes are allowed. No one diet idea is without flaw, and there are drawbacks to every program. If asked what the best way to lose weight is, the only sensible answer is whatever diet you will stick to. However, if there is no specific diet that all your people can agree to follow, then you must conclude that you are not really willing or able to pursue that strategic goal. Which is no shame. Life offers many opportunities to do quite well being competent. You don't have to strive for excellence. It's just that if you are not willing to do what it takes to achieve excellence, you should probably just shut up about it, internally and externally, and stop pretending. There is no business benefit in claiming to pursue a goal that everyone can tell you don't have the guts to pursue. It not only makes you look foolish to clients or customers, to staff and to colleagues, but it also deeply demoralizes people and breeds cynicism. Declaring your commitment to strategies that you don't subsequently follow will lower your organization's energy and its profits. What gets people on the diet? If all business improvements is like getting a fat smoker to change the habits of a lifetime, or like helping an alcoholic recover, then what actually gets people and organizations to change? We all know the main thing that works: a major crisis. If revenues drop off sharply, it's amazing how quickly businesses can act to deal with known inefficiencies and bad habits they could have tackled years ago. And when the first heart attack comes, it's amazing how many people suddenly find the self-discipline to start living right. That's close to what happened to me. Until March of 2005, I was a fat smoker. I've been overweight for most of my life and smoked a pack a day for 37 years. I don't say that as a confession. I never pretended that getting fit was my strategy. But then a variety of medical conditions put me in the hospital with a kidney malfunction. In the 5 months that followed, I stopped smoking, started exercising, and lost 30 pounds. This was all wonderful news for me and an amazing and welcome surprise for my family and friends, but a depressing conclusion for any theory of change. Do people and institutions really have to wait until something very serious happens to them to fix things they've known about for years? Isn't there hope of a better way? We know only a few things about getting people to change before the heart attack comes, but here are some. Lesson one, it's about a permanent change in lifestyle. A major reason that most strategies fail is that too many individuals and businesses think of improvement and strategy as a distinct schedule of activities, separate and sometimes separately accounted for from daily life. Viewed that way, all improvement programs are doomed to failure. As my trainer pointed out, You don't really get the benefits of being an exerciser until it has become as natural and permanent a part of your life as brushing your teeth and taking a shower each day. Anything less than that will put in jeopardy any short-term gains you might obtain with bursts of activity. It's about routines, not special events. Lesson two, you must change the core scorecards and their visibility. Strategy, if it is to be lived and achieved, is about modifying the very rules of daily living and scorekeeping. If you're trying to lose weight, you must get on the scales regularly. If you do not, it's too easy to let yourself go and fool yourself as to how you are doing. But if you're the only one who sees what the measurement says, the force for change will be minimal. We all forgive ourselves too easily. We all find it quite easy to live with guilt. Even high levels of guilt don't change people. However, embarrassment, even in small doses, is far more effective. How much more forceful it would be if you let your spouse see each time what you weigh? Or better yet, what about letting your children monitor your progress? So it is in business and professional life. When I was a teacher at the Harvard Business School, every course taught there was evaluated by the students, and at the end of every semester, the results were published to everyone on campus. There was no doubt at that institution as to what the strategy was. Lesson three, leadership. Get serious or get out of the way. Organizations often rush to figure out how the troops need to change to live the new standards. However, the single biggest difficulty in getting an organization to stick to the diet is convincing them that top management really wants them to. Leadership must figure out a way for it to be credible that they, top management, have actually changed their thinking and are prepared to change the way they act, measure, and reward. If people are to make the right strategic decision in every location of the company, in every operating group, and at every level, then they must absolutely trust that management will back them up and reward them, or at least not punish them, for acting in accordance with the declared new strategy. A large part of really bringing about strategic change is designing some action or new system that visibly, inescapably, and irreversibly commits top management to the strategy. I have sometimes asked company leaders whether they are willing to announce to their people right up front that they will resign their roles if measurable progress is not made on the strategic plans they advocate. Such a commitment has made a dramatic impact where it has been made. Lesson four, principles are more effective than tactics. Since successful implementation of a strategy requires both sustained commitment over time and broad participation across the whole organization, strategies in business, like diets and alcohol recovery, are implemented much better when the ideas are presented as matters of principle, not just as matters of expediency. If strategic rules are justified only in terms of outcomes, exercise daily in order to look good, the diet will always be seen as a punishment on the way to an uncertain and possibly unattainable reward. Accordingly, it will always be resented. If, however, the diet achieves the force of moral principle, such as treating clients or customers and employees with respect is a value around here, not just a tactic, the odds are that significantly higher the successful implementation will be achieved. As I reported in my books, True Professionalism and Practice What You Preach, managers who get things done are people who are seen to have an ideology. Their people believe that they believe in something. Lesson five, people must volunteer. Among the most powerful revelations of any successful recovery or self-improvement program, perhaps the most important is this. It only works when the individual is doing it for himself or herself and has made a personal choice to do it. It doesn't work if the person is doing it only for their spouse or for his or her children or to gain the good opinion of others. To sustain the effort, an individual's got to make a personal choice that the change is being made for him or herself. The motivation must be intrinsic, since the essence of successful strategic change is not technique, but will. If you prefer, you can call it determination, commitment, or resolve. To achieve any goal, you must really want the goal. The common questions presented when discussing strategies and strategic change are often, Do we have to do this? Why, when things are going so well, do we need to accept more discipline into our lives? Why do we need new diets? The answer, of course, is that you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. Strategy in a professional business is a choice that each individual has to make about whether he or she wants to put more effort into his or her life and career in order to get somewhere new. In professional companies, it's dangerous to assume that every person, even every senior officer, wants to make this commitment. That's why most companies and most individuals don't pull off their strategies. Not everyone in the company actually wants to try that hard. They will say they want to be the clear market leader in their field. They're just not willing to do what that takes. You know, it's valid for them to make this choice. After all, I was a fat smoker for 37 years and felt I had the right to remain so. For me and for others, the single biggest barrier to making change is the feeling that it's okay so far. People don't disagree that a future state of being a non-smoker would be beneficial, but they resist when they are told that they have to do it. Lesson 6. People must get on or off the bus. Every individual can and must make a personal choice, but then the organization must decide how to respond to those individual choices. For an organization, strategy cannot be what most of us most of the time do. You'll never be good enough as a company if participation in your company's definition of excellence is optional. If a number of top people have clearly not signed up for the journey or are clearly not true believers, no number of systems or amount of inspired speech making will get you there. Strategy making in professional companies is as often about getting some senior people to leave as it is about bringing new people in. Everyone in the organization has to decide if they want to try hard enough to sacrifice some of the present to achieve a better tomorrow. They may do so if they believe the effort is serious. They definitely will not if they think those at the top are undecided or are divided. Many companies are afraid of this conclusion. They try to work around the skeptics, the non-believers, and the non-participants in their senior ranks, preferring to hold on to the revenue volume that those people represent, rather than achieve a senior team who all want to go to the same place and have the same resolve to get there. That's okay, but you can't call such a decision strategy. People absolutely need the mutual support and social structure that comes from doing this together in common cause. People need to help each other through the tough times with phrases like, "Come on, one last repetition of the training circuit," instead of being part of a forgiving culture that keeps discouraging extra effort. "Oh, that's okay. You can skip exercise today. You deserve a break." Again, that's why other researchers and I keep discovering that the most successful organizations have an ideology. At these companies, if you don't subscribe to the ideology, you don't stay and argue or act as a silent dissenter. You walk, or eventually, you're asked to walk. Strategy may be as obvious as eat less, exercise more. That doesn't make it easy. If it were easy, we'd all do it. Ultimately, as we shall see in this podcast series, effective strategy comes down to the ability of individual managers to create and sustain the determination to do what is obvious but not easy. This concludes this chapter of my book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. If you're interested in pre-ordering a copy of the book in its printed form, visit Amazon.com or my website at davidmaester.com/store.